You're listening to the Superpod Hero Cast, a Night Shift Radio production.
Anywho, Todd.
Yes, sir.
This is not a great movie.
I know. And it had
but
so much potential.
It had potential, but also I'm weirdly not mad at it because it was so innocuous. I'm like, I don't care. Whatever.
Yeah. No,
we didn't get like six terrible sequels because of this movie.
That's true.
It was fine. It, you know, it could have been a little shorter. I'll tell you what I would cut right away. Hey, oh, I'll tell you when we get into it. But yeah.
Yeah. I wanted more. I mean,
hey kids,
more quality.
This might be a short episode.
Yeah. All right.
And with that,
we'll figure that out. Yeah.
Hello.
Hello.
And welcome to the Superpod Hero Cast.
Guys with beers talking about movies with capes.
Episode 134. I'm Casey Ryan.
And I'm Todd Panic.
And we watched Push. Yeah. Ooh, we did that right in sequence.
Yeah,
I like that.
Yeah.
It'll be really easy for you.
Yeah.
Todd, here we are with your favorite superhero.
Yes.
Somewhere between Johnny Storm and Steve Rogers.
Is Nick.
Nick. I'm sitting here going, I don't even remember his name. It's going to be a lot of me naming characters by the actors because I didn't give a shit learning any of these names.
Yeah.
Weirdly, this movie was not great. We already said it in the cold open.
Sure.
It was downright bad at times, but also didn't piss me off. For some weird reason, I was just like, I don't care about this one.
This doesn't
make me angry.
The only thing that makes me sad is that I see so much great raw material in here and I'm a little wistful for what this could have been as a well-curated series.
But we weren't there in 2007 to make this a limited series. So this has been like a
2009.
Well, we still weren't there.
Okay.
if they'd waited 10 years, we wouldn't have had half this cast because they all went on to be other.
Yeah.
Like, the whole time I'm going, why is this in the helmet? And then Chris Evans, Jaimon Hunsu, Ming-Na Wen.
Yeah.
Like, all these people that have been in other fucking comic book and nerd properties. I'm like, oh, that's why.
Yeah, that's why. Dakota Fanning. I mean, nerd properties, you know, Twilight.
I'm thinking of her sister was in
Elle Fanning.
Was in Super 8.
She was?
Yeah, wasn't she the main kid in Super 8?
Oh, Super 8. I'm sorry. I was thinking, I don't know what I was thinking. Geez, I don't even remember. It's been a while since I've seen that one.
That movie also disappointed me.
Oh, well, listen, you know what's one way to combat our disappointment, Casey?
Well, I mean, it's our tagline, since we are.
Guys with beers talking about movies with capes.
What are we drinking?
So our beer tonight comes to us courtesy of our good friends over at Branching Out Bottle Shop. Haven't been in there in a little while. They had an African safari vacation, and logistics didn't cooperate for the last episode. But I was in there today and had a lot to work with. There's a lot going on in this movie, so a lot of things I could pick. Found a brewery that we have not drank from in the past. So this beer is from Long Live Beer Works, which has tap rooms in Providence, Rhode Island, and Roxbury, Mass.
Hi, Charles.
Yeah, hey, buddy. I found some interesting stuff on their website, and here's what I'm going to give you. So they had a little snippet about their head brewer, Armando Dadana. He's a hardcore hop enthusiast and a craftsman at heart. Whether he's building a bar or crafting a recipe, he's always working with his hands. And I thought this was interesting. They gave us a handful of quick facts about Armando. Let's see how these strike you. So they basically kind of framed it, and he filled it in, right? So guiding principle, I'd rather make something than buy something. Friends say I'm totally serious about not being serious. Favorite hop, Centennial. It's the workhorse for the IPA. Favorite beer pairing, burger and an IPA. I'll sign off on that.
Bingo.
Unsung beer style you'd like to see thrive in the U.S. I'd like to see more bars carrying cask conditioned ales. I had some of those when I was in Scotland. They're very interesting.
Oh, yeah.
And finally...
Now, by task conditioned means they're brewed and then they're stored in like a barrel of like... Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and usually...
Like bourbon or whiskey or something like that.
I don't know that the liquor is a requirement, but usually I believe they're also usually served from that, and they're served with like a pump system. They're not pressurized with CO2.
Oh, to give them more of an oaky kind of flavor?
I think it's more of like older, you know, pre-CO2 pressurization and draft systems. They're interesting. I had some when we were in Scotland. They were pretty interesting. But the last quick fact about Armando, I saw this. And I was like, well, I've got to share this with Casey. Kirk or Picard? Picard.
Make it so. I mean, anyone who says that it's Kirk is just out of their fucking mind. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Clearly.
It's Picard all day. And the people are like, oh, Picard never got down with women. Picard actually got down with more women than Kirk.
Let's be honest. The people that say Kirk to Kirk or Picard, it's Bill Shatner. That's who's saying it. It's him.
Kirk versus God. Kirk wins. That guy?
That's right. Yeah. So our beer tonight, one of the things I really love about this movie is this rich lore that they create for this universe. And we meet all these different kinds of people with enhanced abilities. And one of the folks we meet is a sniffer or sniffers, mm-hmm. right? Who have the ability to basically, you know, smell objects and, you know, almost like a read psychokinesis or psycho. I'm trying to remember what psychometry. They can read. Go ahead.
They have the ability to do it through sniff, but a lot of them do it through touch. Like, a lot of them wear gloves.
Yeah, yeah. That was
and one then of my, touch shit. I guess they didn't want to call them touchers.
Touchers?
No. Right. Bad touch. Bad touch.
Yeah. But our beer this evening comes to us from Long Live Brewing, and it is their the all-seeing eye, because, mm-hmm. of course, the sniffers are such a key part of the story. This is a double India Pale Ale. It is hopped with Simcoe, Citra, and Kohatu hops. It comes to us in a 16-ounce craft can, and it is 8.4% alcohol by volume. So you and I each only have one of these. All right, so let's... It is dank. Look at that. It's like orange juice.
It is almost a New England IPA with the coloring to it.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry, Chuck.
Oh, I like that aroma.
Cheers, my friend.
Mm-hmm. Cheers, buddy. Oh.
Oh, that is surprisingly smooth.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Oh, I like that. That is dangerous.
Mm-hmm. Both Simcoe and Citra. Boy, I'm going to sound like a real geek. I can't pick hops apart, but I recognize both Simcoe and Citra as hops in some of my favorite beers. Boy, I really like what they do. Holy cow, that's good.
Oh, boy.
All right. Well, that's a great beer from our friends at Branching Out Bottle Shop.
It is. Hey, so let's just get the one almost cast.
Okay, go for it.
This poor bastard keeps getting attached to comic book and superhero properties and then getting, I don't know, punted, I don't know what, but almost Gambit himself, Channing Tatum, was originally Nick, and it went to Mr. Christopher Evans.
Hmm. Okay. All right.
Which I don't, I think, no offense to Channing Tatum, I think I wouldn't have liked this movie as much. Like, Chris has such a natural way about him.
Yeah.
That I don't feel Channing does. Like, I'm always like, oh, Channing's really, really doing some good acting there. But I forget sometimes with Chris that he is acting.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think he's a great actor, so natural.
And what got him this part, which is weird because the star of that movie is in this. Did you ever see Sunshine? The Cliff, the Danny Boyle?
Is that the one where they have to restart the sun? Basically?
Sort of. It's based on a Russian movie.
Yeah, and then I vaguely remember it. I don't think I ever saw it, but I vaguely remember
Cliff Curtis is in it, who is the, I don't know what he's called, the influencer, the guy that keeps changing shit to make it look like other shit for people.
Oh, a shifter. South Asian. Shifter.
Shifter. The South Asian, actually, not South Asian, I apologize. He's Maori, because he is a Kiwi.
Yes, yeah, Cliff Curtis, I like him.
His accent sneaks out a little bit in this movie every once in a while. Like when he first comes on the screen, like, hello, I'm American. I am here to help you. But by the end, like a couple of lines, like, hello, I'm here to.
He is.
Also, he said, hey there, I'm Coke.
He's, he has as broad, in terms of movie casting, he has as broad of an ethnicity range as, what's his name? Doc Ock.
Alfred Molina. Yeah.
Yeah. Alfred Molina. Yes. Yeah. I love him in Training Day, where he's, is it Snoopy? What's it?
Who? Alfred Molina?
Smiley. No. Cliff Curtis. Oh,
Cliff Curtis.
He's Smiley. Like, he's, I don't. Yeah. He's the gang. The
fuck Training Day did you watch?
Yeah. No. He's the gang leader that Denzel Washington brings Ethan Hawke to basically kill for him.
Hal, I wish we were a video podcast. I've never seen Training Day. There it is.
What? Are you serious? Oh, my God. I'm serious. Such.
Never seen it.
It is such a good movie. It's,
I know, but I hate Ethan Hawke, so.
Well, listen, I don't disagree with you. You should watch it despite Ethan Hawke.
I love. Denzel Washington. Yeah. There it is.
So you got Denzel, Eva Mendes, Dr. Dre, Tom Berenger, Cliff Curtis, Snoop Dogg, Macy Gray, Scott Glenn.
Scott Glenn?
Yep.
Shit.
Raymond Cruz, who you may not recognize the name, but he is.
Oh, no, I do.
Okay. Raymond J. Barry, who was Raylan's father on Justified.
Also, never watched Justified.
Oh, God. You really watched
like the first two episodes of it. I know. And I love Timothy Oliphant, but I don't know. I think it was because I had just caught up with Deadwood.
Yeah. Okay.
That, like, when I started watching Justified, I'm like, well, it's just the same shit. Oh, it's just in modern times this time.
Harris Yulin. Do you remember who?
Why do I know that name?
Because Harris, he's a that guy Yulin. Actor. Let's see. What would.
Well, let me just look up a picture of him.
Yeah.
Y-O-U?
No. U-Y. I'm sorry. Y-U-L-I-N.
Y-U-L.
Clear and Present Danger. He's the National Security Advisor.
Oh, I fuck it. He's the judge in Ghostbusters 2.
Oh, yes. Sure. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's a.
In fact, his known fours are Ghostbusters 2. The Judge, James Cutter, Clear and Present Danger, Training Day, and then he's also in Scarface.
Scarface, yeah.
Detective Mel Bernstein.
Yep.
You know, his brother went on to be a composer. He went to be a detective.
Oh, interesting.
Oh, if you were more of a musical theater person, you would have gotten that.
Oh.
Leonard Bernstein.
Oh, got it. Sure. Okay. Oh, sure. Got it. All right. Yeah, so go watch Training Day, Casey. It's a good movie. And I'll let...
Don't tell me how to live my life, you motherfucker.
I'll let our listeners yell at you for not seeing it.
I fully admit it's a gap. You've never seen Casablanca. Shut up.
That's true. Or what's the one, the Christmas one that they always do with Jimmy Stewart? It's a Wonderful Life.
Fuck that movie. It should be called It's a Shittier Life. And just when you think it can't get any shittier, it does. Except for the last 30 seconds where suddenly he's like, it's Christmas, we're all saved. And you're supposed to feel good. Like, I fucking hate that movie. Oh. We were brainwashed into... Well, okay.
Okay, all right. Yeah.
Incoming rant.
Yeah.
We were brainwashed into liking that movie because... It was owned by Republic Pictures, I want to say, and the rights lapsed, and they're just like, man, it's kind of a Christmas movie. We'll just put it on to play on repeat on Christmas Eve back in like the 70s and 80s because they didn't want to have anybody at the stations. It's back when stations had to be manned. You know, the person would be there but could do other things. and we all just started watching it, we're like, well, yeah, this is a good movie. No, no, it is not.
I'll bet. No. I'll bet. I'm assuming that not the staffing, but I'll bet if it's in the public domain, if the copyright's lapsed,
it's free to.
Yeah. So anyone can. Yeah. You know, that's.
And all the stations were just like, here we go. We're just going to show this movie. And sure. It was trashed. It is listed as, I believe, one of Frank Capra's worst films. So it's just. It's not good. And I can already feel Colin typing to us on the Five Timers Club. Colin, calm down. It's fine.
No.
You can Casey, like the movie.
Casey is totally saying that movie is shit. You should totally type at him.
No. I'm not saying that it's shit. I'm just saying it's fine that I think it is. Also, Old Yeller can go in that category for the reverse. Okay. Because you're like, Boy Meets Dog. What the fuck?
Yeah. Boy Meets Dog. Boy Shoots Dog. Okay.
No. We don't. You motherfucker. We don't talk about the end of your.
Yeah. All right.
Like we don't talk about the end of E.T.
Yeah. Okay. So you started to talk about production there. This movie is written by a guy named David Borla. And if his name is not familiar to you, it's. Sadly, because he didn't really write much. This is the last writing credit he gets, 2009.
Oh, no.
He's got six writing credits, directed a couple things that look like shorts or videos. Honestly, I had never heard of any of these things that he's written. Larceny.
Blame on me.
Larceny, nope. Nostradamus in 2000, which is a movie about... You know, a cop trying to prevent, a cult. Yeah. Doomsday Rock, When Time Expires, and Yesterday's Target.
Woof.
And the last three were TV movies. Connie Selica. Oh, and Jessica Walter was in Doomsday Rock. Selica.
We like Jessica Walter.
Ed Marinaro, Jessica Walter, Marsha Warfield. Okay.
Here's 10. Oh, Marsha Warfield.
William Devane.
Here's $10. Go see a Star Wars.
That's right. So David Borla is the writer. Again, you wouldn't recognize him. Paul McGuigan is the director. He definitely directed some stuff we've seen. Lucky Number 11 with Josh.
Which Hartnett. Has a very similar feel to this.
Yep, sure. Victor
and Chris Pine.
Oh, that's right. Victor Frankenstein with Daniel Radcliffe.
Wanted to like that more.
Sure.
But I did not.
He directs some episodes of Luke Cage, and he directs, and in my opinion, the crowning achievement here, he directed four episodes of the BBC Sherlock series, which is massive. Oh,
can we just do that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That'd be a good one.
We're never going to get any more.
Yeah, I know.
Because Martin Freeman and Benedict Cumberbatch
hate each other. Yeah, that's so disappointing.
Which is so sad.
Yeah.
Because they are so... Now, I'm about to be like, they're so good together, but most of Sherlock and Watson's relationship on that show is hating each other. So I'm like... Oh, all right.
Sure. Other things that show up in terms of the production usually is the money. So this movie gets made for $38 million in 2009, or released in 2009. And
say that again, but slower.
Sure. This movie was released in 2009, made for a budget of $38 million.
This movie just maybe went up a couple points in my head. This movie was made for under $50 million and looks as good as it does.
Yeah.
Fuck. They knew how to spend their money.
Mm-hmm.
This movie looks like a $100 million movie.
Yeah, the effects are great. It looks great, agree. But it only does at the box office $48.9 million. So
I believe that's why there's not a push to keep on pushing. Push.
Yeah, because clearly they were setting up a bigger universe.
Sure, the very end of the movie is definitely like we know what the next movie would have been. And I'm cool with it just being like we know what's going to happen next. We don't need another movie. We know that Nick and not Dakota Johnson, who I thought it was when she first showed up on screen, laying in that bed. I was like, shit, is Dakota Johnson in this? Is Madam Webb in this movie?
Yeah.
Fuck her.
Yeah. Arguably, one of the most crucial characters in terms of the plot is Cassie's mother that's referred to throughout the movie. We never, or I think we see her for a split second, but she's not.
But from behind.
Yeah.
She's definitely supposed to be someone. She was going to be Maggie Smith in the next. I'm thinking the most ridiculous person to have mothered Dakota Fanning. Yeah, and sure. Maggie Smith came to mind. Though, shit, her son is on some show that's really... Percy Jackson?
Maggie Smith's son?
Mm-hmm.
Toby Stevens or Chris Larkin? Toby Stevens, actor, Black Sails, Lost in Space, 13 Hours.
It must be Chris Larkin.
Oh no. Percy Jackson. He was, who the fuck is he? Let's see. We just watched it.
But yeah, that's Maggie Smith's son. Toby
Stevens, yeah, who the fuck is he? Oh, is he Poseidon maybe?
Bless you.
Was he?
Let's see. If only you went to Poseidon, the Easter one. Yeah. You always go to Wikipedia and make it much harder for yourself.
I'll have you know that time I was on Google. Yeah. Okay. But I found him. I found him on Wikipedia. Toby Stevens as Poseidon. Yeah. All right.
Shit. Wait. Glenn Turman was in this?
Glenn Turman was in. He's
Percy Jackson.
Yeah, he's Chiron, the centaur.
You know who he is, right?
He's a that guy actor.
He's the professor from Gremlins.
Yeah,
or the science teacher from Gremlins.
Yeah.
Takes the blood from the one and then it kills him with the needle.
Yeah. Yes, he is.
Because, you know, the 80s, we didn't give a shit about scarring kids. Here's a kids movie where Gremlin blows up in a fucking microwave.
Yeah.
Also, Gremlins might be a good holiday bonus this year.
Oh, okay.
That's a great movie.
Let's riff on monster movies, though, but not like traditional monster movies. Let's think about that.
Just that one, like December.
Oh, yeah, but a double. You mean the double feature?
Oh, right. We do a double feature. Well, I would it be wrong if we did Gremlins and then did Gremlins 2? A new batch.
Yeah.
Wait. Do you not know the story behind Gremlins 2?
No, I do. You've shared it on this podcast. Yes.
Makes it Paddington 2 level good because of that. Because like, oh, you were trying to make a screwball batshit crazy movie. Okay, fine. I am so fine with this movie now.
All right.
Because I was definitely in the camp of Gremlins 2 being a shitty movie. But then when I heard that Joe Dante was purposely spending Warner Brothers money as a fuck you to them, I'm like, I kind of have to love this movie now.
I would definitely be down for Gremlins, and you know, we Critters. Could talk about the second one. Critters. Oh, that's a tough one. No.
With Terrence Mann himself.
Gremlins and Tremors. That's a double feature.
You son of a bitch. Rocking. I'm in.
All right. I think we just called
that was my Morty.
Yeah. You son of a bitch. All right.
You son of a bitch. I'm in.
So that's the money. Casey, yeah. I think there's nothing left to do now.
There's nothing left to do but to, I'm going to push the projector to make sure and roll that film. All right. So Todd, you start us off.
I will. Since 1945.
Nazis. I hate these guys.
The villains we love to hate. Various countries have set up divisions to track, categorize, and experiment on people with psychic abilities to turn them into soldiers. So just in this narrative voiceover that picks up after this little action sequence that's going to be described next, we get Dakota Fanning narrating it.
There are special people in this world.
We get a snippet that I think gives you like this keyhole view into this world. And again, the lore in this universe, I'm 100% enchanted with. So we hear about watchers, movers, pushers, sniffs, shifters, shadows, bleeders. Now that's not all of these special people.
Right.
But I love what the world does. And this is why my broad opinion is this would have been a phenomenal series with a network that would have given it time to develop. and also would, I think, have potentially solved the problem that is the Act 3 problem here, which is this movie is about 25% too complex, right?
The Yes.
The whole heist plot is way too dense.
Oh, the heist plot and also the love plot. Have them just like be friends or something. I didn't need, I actually just skipped ahead when it was just Chris Evans and not Dakota Fanning or not Dakota Johnson.
Right.
There. It's like, oh, I don't need this shit in my life.
Camilla Bell.
She's not Dakota. She's not Dakota Johnson.
She's not Dakota Johnson. Her. Got it. Okay.
Thank goodness. Because she can actually act.
Yeah.
Oops. Yeah. So 10 years ago, two movers, Jonah Gant and his young son, Nick. Hey, this is the first time I'm really realizing we know Nick's last name.
Yep. Me too.
Are pursued by the U.S. Division. Jonah instructs Nick to help a girl who gives him a flower in the future. A team led by Division Agent Henry Carver. Does Jaimon Hunson with this do the hat trick? He's in a Marvel property, he's in a DC property, and he's in a non-Marvel DC property on this podcast. I don't think anyone else has done it yet.
Oh, interesting. We'd have to... I'm going to be an idiot and say this out loud. What's the DC movie that he's in?
Shazam.
Oh, my God. Yeah, he's Shazam. Yep, sorry. Yep, there he is.
He's the wizard. Yeah.
He's the wizard. Yep, sure he is.
He's actually in two Marvel properties.
Sure, because he's in Guardians, and then he's back in Endgame? Is that what you're...
No. I mean, it's still the same. That's still the same, but doesn't he play two separate characters? He's Korath in Guardians and in Captain Marvel, but doesn't he also play? Doesn't he do the Gemma Chang thing where Gemma Chang was one of the...
Just pretend that he wasn't also that other character?
Yeah. Well, to be fair with Gemma Chang, she's under a shit ton of makeup. So when she shows up in Eternals, you're like, what? No, this isn't the same person. What are you talking about?
I'm just looking here. I'm not seeing another Marvel movie.
Okay.
But
any hoozle.
Was he? Oh, wait. This is also showing he was also in Aquaman. Is there a flashback where he's.
No, he's one of the voices.
Got it. The fish or one of the other.
So maybe that's what it is. He's two DC properties.
Got it.
Okay. That's what it is. I knew he was double cast.
Got it. Okay. All right, cool.
So Henry Carver leads the team, a pusher, and kills Jonah, but Nick. Escapes.
Usually you're the one to point out plot holes. There are a couple here that I want to point at. So the first one's up right.
The fact that somehow it seems like Nick's father is both a pusher and a watcher?
I think he would be a... Oh, wait. Is that it? Watcher?
Whatever Dakota Fanning is.
Yeah.
Because he knows all this stuff for the future. Then all of a sudden, like, a cool little side thing.
The watcher. You're right. Great watcher.
The grate comes off of the air duct that separates the two rooms. I was like, oh, cool. Nick uses powers. I'm like, oh, wait, no, his dad did that. Wait.
Yeah.
What the fuck are his powers?
So I don't understand. And then I don't understand, like, the flower in the future thing again, right? So what are his powers? We see at least two. Mm-hmm. I will say I was happy, you know, jumping to the end how do I say this? That's sounding douchey. I'm just going to sound douchey. In a shittier writing style, we would have found out that that you know Nick is this rare flower. He has two or multiple abilities, right? Because all the ones we see are single abilities, right? You're a watcher or a mover or a pusher or a sniff.
I'm sorry. Did you ever watch this before watching it for this?
No, I've never seen this movie before.
I could have sworn there was an airplane fight. With them using powers.
Oh.
It's been since 2009 since I've seen this. So okay. That was a while ago, folks. Sure. And also the... I could have sworn that Nick and... But I guess that wouldn't work. But I thought they were like siblings. Nick and Dakota Fanning's character.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I thought that was coming out in there. That like they have the same... mom but different dads or something. I don't know.
Yeah, so that is one thing. I think some plot holes that I don't understand, so that's the first one. We'll talk about the next one later on. In the present, you love when the movie says today.
It didn't even say today.
It said
a few days from now.
Maybe before that it says today. Because there's definitely a graphic that says today, and I go, oh, Casey's going to hate that.
I missed that one. I did catch the a few days from now. I'm like, Jesus Christ. How many different ways can we say in the not too distant future?
Right. In the present, the U.S. division has developed a drug that can boost psychic abilities, but all test subjects died until pusher Kira Hudson successfully adapted to it.
The old black eyes to normal eyes shtick that is in so many superhero movies.
Oh, I like that effect. I'm just saying
they figured out how to do it, and they're like, control C, control V.
It's better than the two fingers to the temple to let you know that I'm using my psychic abilities. So Kira steals a syringe of the drug and flees, aided by another woman in the facility. So presumably that is, we're going to find out, will be Cassie's mother. Must be
Maggie Smith.
Yeah. Carver orders the division to capture Kira and retrieve the syringe.
Meanwhile, in the Hall of Justice. Meanwhile, Nick has moved to Hong Kong, a common hiding place for psychics. I get that. So many people living there, it makes it harder to sniff them out. I get it. You know, I totally get that part of it.
I really like, so first of all, it's almost a little bit jarring to see, quote unquote, small Chris Evans. I mean, he's a tall guy.
He's
right?
still in very good
he's
shape.
He's in great shape, but he's not cap shape. So that's a little bit, I chuckled at that. But specific to Hong Kong, you know, outside of the martial arts movies, we don't get a lot of movies set in Hong Kong, which is really a shame. It's such a, first of all, it's so visually interesting. And I feel like
there'll be a set piece in Hong Kong. The Dark Knight does one.
Sure.
But not a whole, like this whole movie takes place in Hong Kong.
Part of me wonders, I meant to look that up to see if I could find anything. Part of me wonders if that helped keep the budget down.
It did, but it also made production a nightmare. Most of the vehicles that you see driving by and all that are just, they didn't close any roads. So they had to deal with real traffic, which can be fucking harrowing.
Yeah. A number of years ago, I was watching a documentary. It must have been about, I can't remember if it was specifically about Jackie Chan or if it was about martial arts movies in general. But they talked about some of the many challenges of filming in Hong Kong, even things like trying to do ADR, just like ambient sound is all. It was described as such a challenge,
such a hustle and bustle density. City.
Yeah. But in terms of like visually what we get and all the cool the look of it, I really dug this. I mean, it definitely makes the movie stand out for me, and it's a plus.
I love the multi-tiered basketball court that we get. That's a smart way to do basketball courts.
Sure. Like that terraced hillside and Yeah.
That was very cool. Mm-hmm. So speaking of the basketball court, Nick's powers are blunted from rare usage. So he shot himself off from the forest. Okay,
that's right.
So he's hermit Luke Skywalker, and he incurs debt, and he also gets a shit beat out of him when his powers fail to help him cheat at in gambles. That's not English.
to cheat gambling? Sure.
To cheat at gambling?
Yeah.
To cheat at craps?
It's not craps. There's three dice they throw, so it's
It wouldn't be craps. Yeah, it's got to be some sort
probably
of other
some
thing,
Asian,
right?
You know, some Asian dice game. Yep.
Asian craps?
Sure.
What you say there, Nick?
Who are you?
We're with Division.
Like you didn't know.
Division snippers Mac and Holden.
Well, first of all, Corey Stoll, who I love.
Corey Stoll. Yeah, he's a Marvel guy, too.
Yeah. And then the other guy is Scott Michael Campbell. He's definitely a that guy actor.
Scott Michael Campbell kind of looks like shit. Just forgot his name.
He looks like shit. That's so rude.
Hang on, from Terminator Genesis.
If you're watching ER, he's going to show up in that. He plays EMT Dr. Riley Brown. Oh, he already showed up.
Showed up. He's Shep's partner after he's Ron Ellard's partner after Ron Ellard's partner dies in the fire.
Got it. Yeah, shit ton of TV. Yeah, but also a bunch of movies like looking to see what Hearts War, remember that? Fair Game. Fair Game. That god awful movie with Cindy Crawford and Billy Baldwin. Ooh, yeah. Flubber, the 97 remake with Robin Williams. Hearts War.
So he left ER to go to Flubber. Because I'm in the part of ER where George is making Batman and Robin.
Oh, sure. Sure, sure.
He has that crew cut. I'm like, uh-oh. George, no.
Don't do it. Flight of the Phoenix, Brokeback Mountain. Those are the movie. A Good Day to Die Hard, and then a lot of TV. But yeah, he's great. And Corey Stoll's great.
I never saw A Good Day to Die Hard. I tried it when I had COVID.
Is that the one with Timothy Olyphant?
No, that's Live Free. Live Free. That's a good one. That's the last good one they made.
Got it. I don't even know.
Jason Clark. That's who this guy looks like. Here you go. That's Jason Clark.
Oh, from Terminator. Yes. He's John Connor. He's Terminator John Connor.
Yeah, he's also in Zero Dark 30, Everest.
I did not see Zero Dark 30.
Oppenheimer.
Oh, yeah, sure. I just saw
He's the senator.
Right.
That narrows it down. There's only like 600 senators in that movie.
That's right.
He's on the committee that defames Oppenheimer. He's the one who wants
like 100 senators, but yeah, sure.
Yeah, he's the one who really wants to take down Oppenheimer on the panel.
Got it. Okay. All right, but we're not here to talk about Oppenheimer.
That's okay. I don't want to talk about Oppenheimer. The sniffers, they visit Nick to look for Kira, but find no trace. Nick is visited immediately. Did you also catch when they're sniffing all the stuff that at one point, Corey Stoll's the one who goes into the bathroom, right?
Yes. Yep.
Grabs his toothbrush.
Yeah.
At one point, Chris is brushing his teeth while taking a shit. I'm like, Chris, that's not.
Oh.
It may be time efficient, but
I missed that.
Hygienics wise.
Yeah.
Look, Corey, stop touching.
I have brushed my teeth in the shower, but I've have not brushed my teeth while shitting.
Yeah. My girlfriend in college was like, "This is the most efficient way to brush your teeth." I'm like, "I disagree, but okay."
Did you know that there are
two types? Because we had to take showers together, so I'm like, "Okay, I'll brush my teeth in the shower."
Did you know that there are two kinds of? Did you know that there are two kinds of people in the world? People who pee in the shower, and liars.
Yeah. Oh, I fully pee in the shower.
Of course, it's all pipes. It's all pipes.
And it's easier for us as men, as people with penises, because we've got an aiming device.
Sure.
We can aim towards the drain.
But who cares? It's all water. It doesn't matter.
It's all water. You just don't do it at the end of your shower.
Right. You'll be fine. I would do that early on. Right. That's just common sense. Just like when you shit, you should shit at the beginning of your shower, right over the drain. Oh, sorry. Oh, it took a turn.
No.
Waffle stop. Okay. All right, keep going.
Any hoozle. Nick is visited immediately after the sniffers leave by Cassie, a moody teenage watcher. Obviously, these people who wrote this don't actually have teenagers, because I was like, she's not bad.
She's fine.
She's not bad totally for a 13-year-old. Yeah. She's pretty on brand.
Some people think she looks 14. Those people are pedophiles. No, sorry, please.
Who also wants Nick to help find Kira at a market. Nick and Cassie are confronted by the Trinidad, or not the Trinidad, the Triad. There we go. Who are also looking for Kira. A lot of people looking for Kira.
Yeah, I really like this sequence. It's in the kind of the open air market. It's a really well done sequence. The one thing I will say, so we meet a new kind of superhuman in this one, the bleeders, who can disable or kill their targets by basically doing the X-Men Banshee scream.
That was literally my note. So bleeders are just Banshees?
Yeah. That definitely kill. The only thing I will say is I don't even think there was effects. I think they cast some guys who had like prominent eyes. Yeah, their eyes. It almost looks a little bit cheesy the way their eyes protrude when they're screaming.
It definitely looks like Jean-Claude Van Damme in Bloodsport.
Sure. You know, you've cast Steve Buscemi for his eyes, right? Like that's what they give me some Asian Steve Buscemis. That's what they got.
I'm not even going to correct you.
Steve Buscemi? Steve Buscemi, yeah.
Buscemi?
Buscemi, Buscemi, potato, potato.
Well, as Data says, one is his name, the other is not.
Yep, I saw that. That's fair. That's totally fair. Sure.
The triad bleeders wound Nick.
Yep.
And Cassie calls in a favor from Sitch Teresa to heal him. Good effects.
Yeah.
Gnarly.
Yeah.
But good effects. So it seems like when they're screaming, this may be where it's different.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like when they're screaming at them, it's not just their ears. It looks like it's like fucking up internal organs.
Yeah.
And breaking bones.
It 100% is. Yeah.
Woof. That is some rough shit right there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Teresa, of course, the amazing Maggie Siff, who will find, you know, superstar fame later in The Walking Dead.
Who's she in The Walking Dead?
Nope. Sorry. Nope. Sorry. Wrong one. Sons of Anarchy. Tara Knowles. I'm sorry. I'm
that would be why I don't know her.
Yep. That's right. That's right.
Because then they're going, I watched The Walking Dead for a long fucking time.
Yeah. I can't believe it. Yep. Sons of Anarchy. Yeah. Sorry. Another show that I watched and enjoyed. It was good. I mean, it starts out as Hamlet on motorcycles and then it evolves, but it's good. I mean, if you liked that line of FX dramas that were gritty and dark and more protagonists who are not heroes kind of vibe.
Sure.
You know, The Shield. It's all in that same vein. Kurt Sutter is the writer and creator.
Who also created Hell on Wheels, right?
Did he create that one? I actually think FX was just riding his coattails.
Hell on Wheels wasn't FX, it was AMC.
Oh, right. He did not create Hell on Wheels. He did The Bastard Executioner.
That's what I'm thinking of.
Yeah, which was the medieval one. Yeah.
Which is not Anson Mount, right? Anson Mount's not The Bastard Executioner also, is he?
In the cast of The Bastard Executioner, no. That's Lee Jones as Wilkin Brattle Gowan Maddox, the executioner.
Sorry, I just wanted to talk about Anson Mount for a second. I love him.
Sure. Go for it.
He's so good. You know who Anson Mount is?
Yeah, Black Bolt.
Wow, how fucking dare you? He's Captain Christopher Pike.
I don't know who that
right
is.
Right now. You absolute motherfucker. All right. I'm not getting baited into this, what? You bastard.
What? Me?
Nick realizes that Cassie is a girl he's supposed to help. How does he realize it? She literally just hands him a flower.
Yeah.
I wish there'd been more metaphor to this.
Sure. Like, yeah.
Like the healing room that he was in had the lotus flower on it. And I wish he had been, like, come out and he'd be like, how did you know to come here? And her be like, I saw a flower.
Yeah. You know what?
Something more, because so much of this movie is convoluted, but this is literally like, here's a flower. Yeah,
and I think that's because this plot is so complex. What was it, an hour and like hour 51 with the credits? And
hour 51 with credits, and yeah.
Even that, it feels it, right? Like I don't think they had time to explore all the things. But you know, just thinking, you know, Jack and I just rewatched we rewatched season one and then rolled into season two fresh, and now can't wait for season three. But did you watch Sweet Tooth on Netflix?
Did not.
It's good. It's RDJ produced it, I believe. Again, I like how TV or streaming services has become a vehicle for long form storytelling. And I will fully acknowledge that is sometimes a detriment, right? Where, you know, sometimes just because you can tell a story over 8 hours doesn't mean you necessarily should tell a story over 8 hours. But
see almost every Disney Plus Marvel show.
Ouch. Yeah. That's,
they're all good. It's just. Noted. At some point, you're just kind of like, this episode was pointless.
Mm-hmm.
This episode was just filling a contractual obligation.
Right. Like, so with, in a movie, everything needs to serve that story, right? Because you've got a limited amount of time.
Yeah.
So you learn that, I think, that brevity and, you know, focus. You could use some of that editing and brevity and focus, sometimes in longer form storytelling. Because you're right. I mean, Marvel shows, you're fair. There's plenty of other ones as well that, you know, we'll watch an episode. I'll be like, boy, this could have been, you know, a 10-minute sequence in another episode.
Right. I am definitely not shitting on the Marvel Disney Plus shows. For the most part, I've really enjoyed mm-hmm. them. But we've all come to that, like, okay, the first four, really great. Five, kind of wishy-washy. Six.
Hints at something.
Seven. No, five has a hint in it. Six is kind of like, what the fuck are we doing? Seven is not great until the very end. And you're like, oh, I'm fucking in. And then eight, you're just like getting jerked off for 45 minutes. And you're just like, yes. Except for Secret Invasion. That show hated me in every way, shape, and form. And I hope it gets stricken from the record. I can't tell you how much I hated that show.
I think I can just did.
A lot of it showed up on when we reviewed it with Nahoy.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
Hello, Kira. You have a plane to catch. Come on,
if you want to come with us.
Mac and Holden capture Kira in Hong Kong, but she pushes Mac to kill Holden and escapes. Late 2000s fight sequences where Michael Bay said, This is how I will do all my fight sequences for the rest of the time. Like this bathroom fight sequence. I'm like, could you just not get stunt people? So you had to do quick cuts around because I don't expect Corey Stoll or, Dakota Johnson to be able to like do this shit for real.
Sure.
But it made me a little nauseous.
I had this reaction at this point in the movie, and maybe I feel differently at the end, but I'm going to ask a question to you.
Sure.
Do you think Mac had a brother who was, in fact, murdered by Holden?
No.
By the end of the movie, I didn't think so, but I will admit, at this point in the movie, I did think that was possible.
Right, and you're not really trusting Jaimon Hunsu too much, so when he's like, you didn't even have a sister, and he's like, I didn't have a sister, I'm like, did he?
Sure.
Did he have a sister but not a brother? Like, again, questions that are dropped or like hints of stuff that are dropped that are just kind of like, figure it out, asshole.
Yeah.
It's like the Quentin Tarantino thing that goes around like, guys, I'm so sorry. It's in the script that I have to say the N-word. And who wrote the script, Quentin? It's that same thing like when writers are like, oh, they're leaving it up to the audience. No, I paid for you to tell me a story. I'm okay with an open-ended movie. I actually like a lot of open-ended movies, but this kind of stuff, I mean, I think Mr. Wilson put it best.
That's just lazy writing.
Right. I just rewatched the trailer again for Deadpool 3. I can't wait. I'm so excited.
You mean Deadpool and Wolverine? Yes.
Jack watched Deadpool and Deadpool 2 yesterday because he was like, because the kids are off from school. And he's like, should I watch the Deadpool movies before Deadpool 3? I was like, yes, and I'm going to come downstairs with you and watch them.
Yes, and yes,
he loved it.
Yeah, talking with my mom yesterday, actually, she's like, is it just going to be like a quick cameo of Hugh? I don't think he's going to be in much of the movie. I'm like, Mom, it's called Deadpool and Wolverine.
Yeah,
he's in the fucking movie. I'm going to say he's in at least 70% of the movie.
Gotta be 100%.
Yeah, I don't know, 100%. He's not at Wade's birthday party. Carver dismisses Mac, but Mac insists on continuing, so Carver pushes Mac to kill himself. Both times that Corey Stoll has to fire a gun, he does not fire a gun. Movie magic stops him from doing it both. Now, obviously, I don't want him sticking a gun in his mouth and pulling the trigger, regardless of what's going on there. That one's fine. But when he kills Holden, he never fires a trigger. It cuts on him really quick. He cocks his hand back, but there's no recoil.
Yeah, well, listen.
And I'm like, oh, maybe they're just saving for budget. But then at the end of the film, people are firing guns left, right, and center.
No,
I'm like,
well, there's a practical Corey Stoll? There's a practical reason for that. So I don't recall what kind of guns they were using. They weren't revolvers. Much like an M16, those are gas powered. The force of the recoil from firing the cartridge is what moves the slide back and ejects the spent casing and adds another round. You can fire blanks and they will do that. They'll perform like live ammunition because they have, you know, they've got smokeless powder in there and it'll, you know, you get the same reaction. But those are still dangerous. So you can't fire a blanks at somebody because you'll kill them. If you're firing the gun in your mouth or against somebody's head, you're not going to get the look of the slide racking. It won't.
The gun wasn't again. Mac was like 5 feet away from Holden when he shot him.
Even that close, you can't fire blanks at someone. It's dangerous.
And this is before we started putting digital flashes on the flash muzzles.
Okay.
This is still real flash muzzles happening. All right. Yeah. They happen so quickly in sequence from the same actor. I'm like, he's like, when I did Assassins, mm-hmm. a couple of the cast members were uncomfortable handling the guns.
Yeah.
And we never had any even fake ammunition in them the second time. First time we were all in charge of our own ammunition.
I'm curious at this, and I'm thinking very much in terms of the production of the movie Rust, where Alec Baldwin, of course, is involved. And
woof.
But you know, movie sets have armorers. Actually, when you and I were in the film Somnium for Night Shift Media, they had an armor. One of the crew was the armorer because there was a fake knife, and there was a safety briefing about what it was, et cetera, et cetera. I can't imagine you guys had an armorer. Was your prop master?
It usually falls to the prop master, which we did for Assassins the first time because we all had what are called theater caps.
Okay.
Did you see that one? Did you see the first time?
I saw the time that you almost destroyed a very nice guitar.
Oh, you fucker. So
I didn't throw it.
They have different levels of the pop that they let off depending on the size of the theater.
Got it.
Someone misread them, and sweet Carmen Crafts, who played Squeaky Frome, had a Beretta like that actually had a slide action to it and everything.
Yep.
And everyone else's guns were registered for a 700-seat theater, which I believe is the smallest one you can get. Still lets off a lot of noise. Mm-hmm. Carmen's was, I believe, a 7,000-seat theater.
Oh, my.
It is so fucking loud.
Oh, my.
And it's the biggest gun in the tiniest person holding it.
Oh my gosh. Holy cow.
Yeah. But yeah, we had a safety briefing. No one was allowed to touch the gun that I had to put to my head at the end. And the one that I used when I was John Wilkes Booth was a dead gun. It was purely a replica. It had the barrel was solid.
Sure.
So there was no way for me to accidentally hurt myself.
Yep.
We didn't really have to have a safety briefing on that. It was just all the gunshots happened off stage by one person.
Yep.
So no one touches the gun but that one person. They are in charge of loading it. It was all, they kind of became the prop master.
Yeah, I'm fascinated by that. It's interesting. So as you're aware, last week, Aubrey and I took Jack and one of his friends to Bad Axe Throwing, which is right next to our friend's Branching Out Bottle Shop over in Township 5. Had a great time. But these are obviously dangerous weapons. The axes we were throwing, then we also threw knives, which is super fun. But I was at times a little uncomfortable. So, you know, when I was in the service, I carried a firearm every day that I was working.
When you weren't flying planes.
When flying planes. And I think maybe I'd handled a firearm a couple times before as a youth. But my dad didn't hunt. We didn't hunt. But basically all my exposure to firearms was in the military. And certainly, at least in the Air Force, you know, we're trained, and I think it's true for every branch, trained to handle firearms ritualistically, right? Like there is such, it very much appeals to the, you know, the Catholic upbringing, former altar boy, right? Like there are rules, process, and everything happens a specific way.
Sure.
You know, how you receive your, you know, security forces, how I would receive the Beretta, how I would get my ammunition, where I would load it, the clearing barrel, the end of the shift, how I clear it, all those things. At times I was a little uncomfortable. There was nothing wrong with Bad Axe Throwing. I'm not throwing shade, but I was expecting a little more rigor in terms of the formality of handling of the axes and knives. And I found myself a couple of times uncomfortable just because it was so casual. And I'm sorry, this long roundabout story, I'm thinking,
no, you're good.
I think I would maybe potentially be uncomfortable in a stage setting like that if I felt that it was informal. I'm not implying that anyone did anything wrong, but that death on Rust happened because, frankly, of it looks like sloppiness. Right.
Just cutting corners. Yeah, 100%. The only other time I've been in a show with a gun going off, two times, was in high school. The movie Heaven Can Wait.
Oh, yeah.
Is a play.
Okay.
That also had another movie of it called Here Comes Mr. Jordan that is closer to the play, because in the play he's not a football player, he is a heavyweight, we had to change it because of my size in high school, boxer. Sure. They made it welterweight, because that's what a category I would have fallen in high school.
Really?
I was 150 pounds in high school.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I was a teen. Well, thank you ADHD and Ritalin, because oh, kept me thin.
Oh wow, holy cow.
Oh, and Oklahoma. But in Oklahoma, we had dead guns.
Okay.
And the conductor had the pistol, because he was on stage. Or he was on there, and music's not happening when Judd and Curly fire their guns.
Yep.
And he fired them, and all we had to do was just pretend to recoil them.
Interesting. Interesting.
So...
Okay, well, thanks for going on that. I've handled
guns a lot in shows. I just realized this.
Yeah, well, thanks for going on that little journey with me.
Of course.
It's better than talking
about this film, man.
But again, for our audience, this is really the way that our conversations go, right? Like, we'll start at the superhero movie and go on some odd tangent, so that these really are organic. Like a fern.
Yeah, like a fucking fern. Carver pushes Mac to kill himself.
Yes.
Bye-bye, Corey. We'll see you again when you are a giant head. Oh, yeah. Oh wait.
Sorry. Yeah.
So that's a little spoiler for a movie we haven't got to yet.
Sure. Nick and Cassie track down Kira with the assistance of a shifter, Hook Waters, the previously mentioned Cliff Curtis that we are big fans of, and sniffer Emily Wu. Kira has hidden the syringe.
Wait. We can't skip by Ming-Na Wen.
Oh, Ming-Na Wen. Sure.
Love her. Her first character arc has already happened on ER. She'll be back, but she is a woman who walks through many worlds. She's Marvel.
Yep.
She's May.
Yep.
She's Star Wars.
Yep.
She may be DC. I feel like she's done something for DC.
Was she in the second Shazam movie? Oh, no, that's Lucy Liu.
No, that's Lucy Liu.
Oh, yep, that's racist. Sorry.
No, it's not racist. You caught yourself pretty quick.
Street Fighter. She was in Street Fighter.
Oh, God, yes, she's Chun-Li. Oh, she's speaking voice of Mulan.
Right.
The singing voice, is, of course, the wonderful Lea Salonga, also the singing voice of Princess Jasmine in Aladdin.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Well, you're not a big theater nerd like me. She was also Eponine in the 10th anniversary Les Miserables.
Oh. She is a voice actor in the 2004 to 2008 animated series The Batman.
Yeah, that's what it is. Where Bruce Wayne looks Asian.
Oh, Mark Hamill is Tony Zuko. Who plays Bruce Wayne in this?
Because Kevin Michael Richardson is... the Joker in that one.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
The Batman is Rhino. I can't think of his last name.
Is that
his last name? Is it Ray Rhino?
Oh, Rhino Romano.
Rhino Romano. Huh. Ray Romano was what's holding me up. You may not know the name, but if your kids ever watched Curious George, he's the voice of the narrator.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, it's so weird to watch. I'm like, why is Batman narrating this fucking episode of Curious George?
There's some great talent, voice talent in this.
They got some good talent.
Adam West is the mayor.
Yeah, fuck yeah, he is.
Oh, Ron Perlman is Killer Croc?
Shit. I mean, that's a pretty great casting.
Patrick Warburton is Cash Tankinson. I don't know who that is. But Jesus, holy shit, there's a shit ton of people in this.
Yeah, it's back when they actually gave a shit about giving money to this shit.
Yeah. Wow. James Remar is Black Mask. I love him. He's great.
Kevin Conroy plays Joe Chill on Batman Brave and the Bold.
Got it.
The one with Diedrich Barber.
The wonderful Clancy Brown, Mr. Freeze.
Lex Luthor himself.
He's been popping up because it must have been a relatively recent Inside of You he was on. So I'm getting a lot of snippets of his video stuff talking about...
Clancy?
Yeah. Maybe it was old and maybe it's just the algorithm. But talking a lot about the Highlander, which of course is a wonderful movie, which almost made me into
the one of my picks. Still the part that I'd love to hate him in is the head guard in Shawshank.
Shawshank, yeah.
Such a piece of shit in that movie.
Yes, 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 yes.
Makes me so angry, but he's so good. He's
so good, yeah. It's so funny. He was telling Michael Rosenberg.
Rosenbaum.
Rosenbaum. He thought... He was convinced that they'd made a mistake, that he wasn't supposed to be there, like on the flight out and everything. And yeah, it was pretty cool.
That's an older one. I just remember that because they talk about how they're both Lex Luthers.
Oh, that's right. Yep, you're right.
Rosenbaum keeps trying to get Gene Hackman.
Oh, sure.
Like,
he's retired.
Gene's living the good life in Tucson, Arizona. Is that where he lives?
Not a clue. He's retired, though. And
I think that's where he lives. Yeah. Yeah. Huh. Welcome to Mooseport. Gene Hackman go, I think I'm done.
I think I'm good. I'm good, guys.
I think he showed up in something like his grandson did, like as a voice, but that's literally it. It was not like a return to acting. It was doing a favor for my grandson.
Good for him. Why shouldn't he get to retire?
Yeah.
All right. So
made a fuck ton of great movies, so go right ahead.
Sure did. Kira has hidden the syringe and had Wiper Wo Chang erase her memory of its location, protecting it from division agents. This is a really cool plot device. I really like
this. This didn't feel convoluted. Of all the things in the movie that I was like, wait, what's happening? I was like, this is really smart. I'm going to write directions, and then someone's going to wipe it out of my mind. So I don't even know what they are.
No, that's later. That's the part where it starts to get very complex. This is earlier. So basically, Kira, the woman who escaped from the lab.
Oh, right.
She hid the syringe and then had...
I jumped ahead in my brain. Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah.
And had the wiper erase her memory.
Right.
So Nick recruits Shadow Pinky Stein, who is the wonderful actor Nate Mooney, who plays the creepy Ryan McPoyle in one of the McPoyles in It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
I mean, he just plays... He's kind of got a pedophile vibe to him.
He kind of does. Although in this one, he's fine. Like you're like, oh, he's a regular person. I do feel bad for him.
But keep him away from Dakota Fanning.
Yes.
Keep him away from Cassie. Wait a minute. Let me figure. I'm not accusing this actor of being a pedophile. Yes.
Keep the character away from the other character.
Yeah.
Teresa betrays Nick. Oh, wait. No, I jumped ahead. Sorry.
Sure did. Spoilers.
Nick recruits Shadow Pinky Stein. To hide Kira from the division. Nick and Kira, who are former lovers, reconcile and kiss.
Pointless subplot! Okay, that's all I need to say.
Got it. Okay, fair. Nick tracks down Carver with Emily's assistance and attempts an ambush. Carver reveals that Kira will eventually die without more of the drug, which only Carver has. Mm-hmm. Carver's right-hand man, Victor, defeats Nick.
Victor? Since this is the first time he's coming up in here.
Yeah.
Victor looks like a combination of Billy Magnuson from Game Night, the stupid one.
He's on the East 4th Street Bridge at midnight. If you're late, he dies.
Oh, my God.
What's up with this guy's voice? He sounds like a monster.
He's using a voice changer, Ryan.
Still sounds like a scary monster.
And Aaron Tveit.
Camels make love in the desert. A table... works best with a chair.
Current Sweeney Todd on Broadway.
Oh, okay. I was
look up Aaron Tveit. Just look up Aaron Tveit.
Aaron Tveit.
Tveit. T-E-V-E.
Oh yeah. T-E-V-E-I-T. Okay. All right. Okay. Oh, I see where you're going with that. Okay.
Yeah. And think of Billy Magnuson. Like it is the perfect combination of the two of them.
Yeah. He's a real dick. We don't like him.
Who?
The character, Victor. Victor.
Victor's oh, name. Oh, I was like, wait. Yeah. I mean, I don't like Aaron Tveit because, I don't know, call me crazy. If there's a role on Broadway that's written for a bass, have a fucking bass play it.
Okay. Hey, friends. You just got to experience a little bit of angry actor Casey there. Now back to our regularly scheduled podcast.
Don't make it a fucking tenor. It's that simple.
Sure.
Because... bootlegs of his stuff are coming out, and guess what? He can't hit the low notes. It's really like instead of being attend the tale of Sweeney Todd, it's attend the tale of Sweeney Todd. Like he's pushing to get those notes out. I'm like, oh, for fuck's sake, let baritones be baritones.
I hear you.
I'll have this conversation with Audrey instead.
Okay, all right, there you go. Yeah, have it with Jack. Jack's a, I think Jack is a bass or a baritone. I'm sure he'll.
He's a baritone. He's a baritone with a beautiful falsetto. Little jealous of his falsetto.
Yeah, just had Cinderella. He was. I'm so proud. Of
when him. He went, the king is giving a ball. I'm like, what?
Yeah,
you're a sophomore in fucking high school, and you can do that. Fuck you. I was very impressed.
Well, I was very impressed with this action scene. I like the battle of the pushers. Their use of, you know, the two telekinetics manipulating their guns, blocking bullets, and then ultimately, you know, Victor is more skilled than Nick is, and Victor just mopping the floor with Nick's body, right? Like literally throwing him around the room.
But it was all. Wait, is this? Are we in the?
This is in the restaurant where he comes.
This is in the restaurant.
He's got
okay.
the two I've got guns above his head, like so they don't see him. Which I thought was pretty cool.
That was very cool. Yeah, yeah. When we get to the construction site, there's a moment where it's like, did Victor not know how to do this?
No. I think if anything, I think you can.
No, yeah. I'll wait till we get to it. I know what you're saying. I don't want to say it yet.
In this fight, I think Victor knows that he clearly has Nick outmatched.
Right,
and I think he's playing with him.
Yep. Oh, 100% in this one. Yeah.
And you can see that little bit of like the sadist in him, almost like he's toying. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's toying with him. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sure.
So Carver's right-hand man, Victor, defeats Nick. Cassie convinces Carver to spare Nick. Cassie finds a key in Kira's shoe, which unlocks the locker containing the syringe.
Why wasn't it just like a locket, like in Fish Called Wanda? Why did it have to be in her shoe?
I wonder, darling.
Constable.
And I thought, where is he going at 6:30 in the morning with the shotgun?
You fucking bitch! I just rewatched that movie, and may I say again, if there's ever a staged version of that, or some theaters here were doing readings of movies and like during some of the action sequences, they would. Can we just do that so I can be Otto?
Oh God, I would love to. I will come support you in anything you do because you're my BFF. I would actually love to see you as Otto. I would truly love that.
Oh, you English think you're so superior, don't you? Well, you know where you would be without the good old US of A? I'll tell you, the smallest fucking province in the Russian Empire. So don't thank me.
I'm sorry.
But what the fuck were you doing? Robbing your own house, you asshole! I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Kevin Klein. He should do a Kevin Klein podcast. God, he's so good.
He is one of the few people to win an Oscar for a comedic role.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
And he, like full-on comedy. He is capital C in that role.
Oh, God, he's so fucking brilliant.
His dick. And he's dead.
You know what I'm watching right now? And I 100% think one of the actors is channeling Kevin Klein. Mm-hmm. It kind of came and went on HBO with very little fanfare, which I don't understand because it's fucking hilarious. But White House Plumbers.
Oh.
It's about the.
Never even heard of it.
It's about the Watergate scandal.
So
the two leads are Woody Harrelson as the guy that you don't necessarily remember his name, and then it's Justin Theroux as G. Gordon
not Liddy. Justin Trudeau, the Canadian prime minister.
Yeah, and I'm thinking of the what's the documentary, Louis Theroux. But Justin Theroux as G. Gordon Liddy, and he is He's got to be, but even like his character is so absurd, he's got to be channeling a little bit of Otto. There's no way that I would believe he's not. But it's really fucking funny. It's really fucking funny.
This is a good cast.
Oh, it's a phenomenal cast.
Holy shit, man.
Yeah, it's worth watching. And I think it's only 5 episodes. Yeah, it's short.
Move it along, guys.
That would be you.
No, it's you.
Did you finish your thing about
containing the syringe? I did.
I don't remember.
Because you said why isn't it like a locket like in Fish
Called Wanda? Oh, Fish Called Wanda, then we went on. Okay. Aided by Cassie, Nick plans to write instructions for his allies, then has his memories erased by Wu Chang.
Yeah, so my note here is this is a really interesting idea, this idea that they don't know this plot until they're doing it, but this is really the point where the movie tips over, and it's too dense, it's too complex. This is where it would have benefited from more time.
We're about 40 minutes from the end.
Yeah.
I think that also hurts it, that they're trying to cram all of this in 40 minutes.
Yeah.
I would have actually been okay with this being a 2.5 hour movie with all this complexity happening if they gave it more room to breathe.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's being jammed at us so quickly. I think that's the problem.
Yeah. Something's got to shift there. You've either got to simplify this a little bit, or you got to have more time to tell it. But
yeah.
This combination is tough.
Yep. I could not agree more, sir.
Yep.
So Hook creates a duplicate of the syringe while Pinky delivers Kira to Carver as part of the plan. Teresa betrays Nick to the Triad, passing Hook's duplicate syringe to them before Nick defeats her. Carver influences Kira but to believing that she was a division agent. Well, that's not clear in the actual movie, but I guess we're just going to skip that that's a twist. That's fine. And that their relationship Nick was a cover.
What is not clear?
That he's manipulating her. Yeah, we never see his eyes go black. We never see any of that.
I think, so we will have a definitive answer later, and I think it's supposed
sure,
to
I'm
be,
just saying that here it's like, oh my God, I can't believe she's a double agent.
Yeah, yeah. And again, I think until the end, you know, the whole thing with Mac and believing that he had a brother killed by the other guy, mm-hmm. Mac's brother was killed by Holden. I think it's supposed to be ambiguous here.
100%. But I'm just saying in this synopsis, they're just nope.
Okay.
He's totally fucking with her.
Sure.
Where was I? Believing she was an agent in the relationship with Nick was a cover. Cassie is ambushed by the Triad's Pop Girl, only for Wu Chang to appear and erase Pop Girl's memories per Nick's instructions.
And this is the part where, again, Nick is a pusher. I don't necessarily understand how, like, this almost seems to require, like, the Watcher ability, the future sight, or was Cassie giving him...
I think he just knew that eventually... I'm not sure that the instruction was to woo erase Pop Girl's memories. I'm sure it probably was someone from the Triad is going to show up, erase their memories, like...
Yeah, but even then, this is where I think the internal, like, something's not...
Look, it's not 100%.
If we find out that Nick has multiple abilities...
That would have made it a lot better. 100%.
Yeah. But then you would have the problems of, like, he's the chosen one, right? Like, it's, of course, he's perfect. He has all the abilities.
This movie is already aping on The Matrix so hard. Like, why not? Like, I just wanted someone to say to him, there is no fork.
Sure. That's fair. So Nick visits Carver to trade the syringe for Kira, only to discover she had been brainwashed and is restrained.
Bum, bum, bum.
The bit I love the most of this is when Carver specifically points to a memory and says, remember that? Yeah, that's false. Like, which again...
The Coney Island. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I don't think we have any indication that put that... I'm sorry. What's the... pushers is the telekinesis. What's the the mind control? Movers. Movers.
It's confusing because the movie's called Push.
Yeah.
So you think, oh, Chris Evans is
Nick
star.
Is a mover. He's a telekinetic. Yeah. Right. Push is the psychic brainwashing. That's right. Like, there's no reason to think, based on what we learn in the movie, that the pushers can read their minds. So I don't know how Carver would have known about that specific memory.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, so again, this is where, I mean, I'm quibbling, but I'll sign on to anything. But once we're in it, it's got to be internally consistent. And I think there's enough cracks here that it bugs me. So...
The thing that bugs me the most is this whole thing where Pop Girl keeps saying, I've seen your death to...
Cassie, not Dakota Johnson.
Cassie, yeah. No, yeah. not... No,
oh, not...
No.
Oh, not...
Dakota Fanning.
Right. Dakota Fanning.
And it's never, it's kind of resolved because she's drawing tigers and she's at that place and that's where Wu comes in. But it's so prominent throughout the film. I wanted more tension in that moment. It's like the gun's on her and all of a sudden it's like, surprise, now you don't have those memories. Goodbye.
And especially when it's presented to us that the future is so fluid. It can change so easily. Like all the things that they're doing, nothing shakes this vision of her death that it does seem odd. Again, these are the little cracks in the logic.
And even if it had been like, the future is so, like Doctor Who. This is one thing I know about Doctor Who. The future is fluid. They're fixed points. Like, don't call it fixed points because Doctor Who will sue you. But same idea. Like, no matter what I do, no matter what outcome I, like.
This is a boulder, right? Like, this one you can't
This
move.
Is coming at me. Yep. If they just had that quick bit of dialogue, like, I've tried to see that I go to this place and gone to this place and I still see my death.
Sure.
Like,
the future is a river, right? Moving in water, but there are these boulders sitting in it that the water has to move around because they don't move. Yeah, that's fair.
Right.
Yeah. So Kira, Carver, and Victor visit a construction site to retrieve the syringe, but the Triad ambushes them, leading a battle that kills many Triad members and inadvertently frees Nick, who also joins the battle.
So suddenly we are in Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark. Like if that had Triad member hadn't fallen on the car and popped open the trunk, Nick would have just suffocated to death.
Well,
coming from someone who has been trapped in a car trunk. That's no fun.
I would not want to be there. I would not want to be there.
I did not want to be there.
I do love this new exploration of their powers. And I feel like I'm surprised that we haven't seen this in other superhero movies. We've certainly seen superhero movies where, you know, there's telekinesis and the ability to move your mind. I love this idea that, okay, I'm going to punch you and kick you, and I'm going to use my telekinesis to augment the force of that.
Yeah.
It's so ingenious. It looks really good. The effect works. I love that bit. And Victor showing what master push moving looks like and literally blocking bullets from multiple directions while still throwing his foes. This is the point where it's clear that he clearly was toying with Nick earlier because his ability to hold off, you know, a dozen guys with guns while still killing them is, you know, Nick didn't stand a chance earlier.
So two things, though, that leads me to the fact that when Nick starts using the push power, the mover power as like force punches, like pretty much when we're in this sequence and they're moving stuff.
Yeah.
Do you remember the game, The Force Unleashed?
Yes, I do.
It's exactly how the force is used in that. It's like this bubble that pops out. I'm like, ooh, did they get that from this? But also you saying using powers in interesting ways. Have you watched the X-Men 97 trailer?
No.
Todd, there's a part where Gambit piggybacks onto Wolverine and then charges his fucking claws.
I saw that image. I didn't know where it came from, but that makes... Wolverine has laser claws? Yes, I've seen that image.
I never knew I wanted something so badly.
Until now. That's right.
My God, right, when that happened in the trailer...
we'll take Gambit just to give us the laser claws. Fine.
But when that happened in the trailer, I was just like, what the fuck? And... collectively, the entire nerd internet has been like, what the fuck? Like, someone's like, whoever wrote that bit should get a raise,
should get
a promotion. Like, that is the instant you did. I was like, why has this never happened in the comics?
Yeah.
Gambit's been around since like the 80s. Come on, man.
Right. Let's see.
Victor's killed.
Victor's killed by the Triad leader, whom Nick defeats.
Does Nick defeat the Triad leader, or does he just finish him off because the Triad leader has a dumb moment? Like, he's surrounded by bamboo. It's not it's scaffolding, whether it's bamboo or iron, and he just starts screaming his banshee scream at the top of his lungs. Everything starts shaking, and it's almost like when someone's playing Jenga and it's moving and you just walk up and you just go boop.
Yeah.
Boop it, give it a little boop. That's what Nick did. He booped it.
I am, you know, as someone who, I've lived in New York City, you lived in New York City, this is a staple of, when we see Hong Kong in movies, the scaffolding is bamboo.
It's got to be for real, that would be horribly racist.
Yeah, it just blows my mind, though, right? Like, I think of the permanent scaffolding in New York City, right? And that's just crazy to me.
Bamboo is, as I'm sure you know, incredibly strong.
Sure.
So,
sure. And it grows like crazy, right? It's a wonderful
and there's resource. Tons of bamboo. Yeah, yeah. I don't know why we don't do it. Oh, yeah. That's right. We don't need to go down that rabbit hole. Let's just finish this movie out.
Sure. Nick seizes the syringe and injects himself with it. Mm-hmm. Question.
Answer.
So right after this, like Carver takes control of Nick, why doesn't Nick walk off the edge of the roof? Like Carver was telling Kira to have the rest of the goons, you know, walk off the roof.
And they instantly do it. Yeah.
What stops him? Again, there's no explanation for this.
There's this thing called the script. and since he is the lead of this scripted movie. Yeah, it's plot armor. It's the most deus of ex machinas.
That's the worst. It's the worst because, again, listen, if we find out that Nick is a, you know, uber super, you know, who has multiple abilities, he can resist pushers. Okay, that would have
been the moment for his powers to kick in.
Yeah, but we don't get an explanation. Just like all of a sudden he's not under, like Carver can control Kira, but he can't control Nick. I don't understand that. So I don't understand that. Believing the drug will kill him, Carver leaves with Kira. After they leave, Cassie appears, revealing that Nick is alive as he used a syringe with a fake drug.
Nine dragon soy sauce.
That's right.
That's gross.
That's
I have a sneaking suspicion injecting soy sauce into your...
would be dangerous. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, so he's still going to die, right?
I don't know if he would die, but I can't imagine it's a good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. Agree.
Like the only thing that should go into your bloodstream aside from like vaccines and stuff like that is blood.
That's right. They retrieve the real syringe and discuss using it to free Cassie's watcher mother from the division, who hatched the entire plan to take down the division before Cassie was born.
Good job, Maggie Smith. Really sticking to that joke.
You're committed.
Later, Kira discovers an unopened envelope which contains a photograph proving that her relationship with Nick was real. This is the most plot holy of plot holes. How did Nick know that
she Kira would be controlled? Kill him. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
With instructions to kill Carver, Kira pushes Carver to shoot himself.
Yeah, and clearly this was intended to set up a sequel. Again, we talked about earlier, who is Cassie's mother? How powerful is she that she can set up plans a generation, you know, later? But because we don't get it, you know, that would have been a great season two, right? If this is Westworld on HBO, that would, you know, the search for Cassie's mom is season two. Great, I'm there.
100%.
In the same way that Joss Whedon has talked about the events of the movie Serenity, that would have been season two, right? Them discovering Miranda would have been, I think, the end of season two, he said, which means
it
was
season
three. Yeah, like, and I don't think he said he wouldn't have killed Wash, which is the right thing to say and do.
I'm a leaf on a wind.
Watch how you, of course, you know how Reavers clean their spears. They run them through the wash.
Yeah. So we get... Kira looking at Carver, her eyes go black. The screen goes black. We hear her say,
"Pull the trigger."
Trigger is pulled, and movie. So Todd,
that was a movie.
That was a fun. I'm not mad about this movie.
Yeah, like, same.
This movie didn't piss me off. This movie was not great.
I'm disappointed because I think it could have been even better.
I'm not like, fuck, they really fucked this up. I'm more like, man, this could have been a better film.
Yes.
So I'll save my, obviously, my score for a minute. But before we do that.
Yes.
We, of course, have some questions. Todd, that first question is, who was your favorite character?
I do like Cassie as a character, but it's Nick.
It's Nick. Yeah. Because we love Chris Evans.
We do.
Dear Chris Evans, come be on our podcast.
Just hang out with us. We're cool guys.
Hey, man, we don't have to talk about Captain America. Yeah, no. I know you're leaving that time. We don't even talk about Fantastic Four. We could talk about politics, smart man. Pack.
You can talk about whatever you want.
Well, don't be a smarty.
Yeah. Casey, what's the best scene in the movie?
It's the whole Hong Kong's... it's the whole Hong Kong. No, yeah. it's a skyscraper. It's the end.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good payoff. Yeah, it's good. I mean, I like the earlier one because it's almost like a appetizer. But where they're in the market and the first time we see the bleeders, and again, it's just a taste of how big this world is. But either of those, yeah, it's good.
Todd, what's one scene you would cut?
Well, we've talked about it extensively. It's not a scene, but it's this plot is just too complex for a movie, a movie of this length. So you gotta simplify the plot, or have more time to tell the story. But it's just too dense.
So I'm going to go with more time to tell the story, because okay. If this was 2.5 hours and the plot was more fleshed out, I would have been happier. I'm going to say it's the ridiculous rom-com bullshit they're pulling in the hotel room.
Got it.
Like when he runs, he's like, oh, I thought the room was on fire. Well, I had to get you in here some way. Get this out of my fucking face.
Got it. Fair.
Just stop. I don't want any part of this in my life.
Finally, Casey, our last question. Who is the actor having the most fun?
It may be Dakota Fanning.
Yes, I think so. I think
she's playing against type for what she's done up to this point in her career. So
yeah, there's the scene where she goes to get the two guns and she walks back and she's like, shit, you know, like, yeah, I just think she's having a blast.
And she plays drunk really well.
She does.
I gotta say.
She does.
She played it really, really well. Cause the secret, I'll give you the secret sauce to playing drunk.
Yeah.
The secret is you're trying to play not drunk.
Got it. All right.
Because when you're drunk,
you want to sure.
As not.
Sure. So that's fair. That's
just
fair.
Overcompensate everything you do.
All right. Now, Casey, do you recall from last episode what the IMDb score for this movie was?
Mid fives?
6.1.
Okay. That's, I'm going to move it up to a 7.1.
You know, I'm actually good where it is. But again, okay. Neither of us hated it. There's a lot of potential here. I love the lore.
Here's a question we'll bring back.
Yeah.
Kind of an update and kind of a how did this get made. Would you recommend people watch this film?
Yes, I would. It's got a great cast. Any problems have nothing to do with the performances. It is fun. It's in a cool setting that we don't see a lot of. I enjoyed 100%. Watching it. I just wanted it to be a little bit better, but... I was not upset.
I, too, wanted it to be better. But, again, I'm not mad that this is what we got. I just don't care.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. I'll be honest with you. I'm not going to rewatch this.
No. Yeah. Two watches for me is fine.
Yeah.
I watched this when it came out, and I believe I had the exact same reaction. I'm like, oh, that could have been better. That wasn't too bad.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Fair.
All right.
Well, Casey, this is a very important time in our podcast. Wow.
It's normally the time where someone says,
and now it's time to pick the next movie from Thor.
But not tonight.
Not tonight. For coming up very soon in the future of this podcast, we're going to watch a birthday pick of mine.
Ooh,
we did yours, sure. Super Ex-Girlfriend.
Yep, a lot of fun.
And what we're going to do for mine, can we cue up the music? Thank you so much. We're going to do...
I wonder what music I just queued up. Are you going to send
it to me?
Find
out. Okay. You'll find out when you edit this. We're going to do a movie that also has someone who has had their death foreseen to them. A movie that...
Jesus Christ. Oh, no. Okay. Sorry.
It is a comic book movie, but at times doesn't feel like a comic book movie. It feels more like a Western. We're going to do a movie that we were just talking about, a actor returning to the role after leaving the role in this movie. Guys, gals, non-binary pals, we're going to be watching James Mangold's Logan.
Is that the next one in the X-Men universe? Oh, that's
you
a great
bet your sweet
pick.
Polish ass it is.
Holy shit. Well, listen, that is fucking... First of all, that is a Western, and it is a fucking masterpiece. Holy shit.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to guess what the IMDb score for the 2017 Logan is?
If it's anything less than the mid nines, then people are stupid.
Well, Casey, people are stupid because it's an it's an 8.1. That's ridiculous. What? That's ridiculous.
Absolutely.
I'll tell you right now, it's a 10. I'll give you my rating now. It's a 10. It's a perfect fucking movie.
Yeah. There's nothing I would change about this movie.
Oh,
fuck. No, fun fact, you're going to watch this in color. I'm going to watch it in the version that I have, Logan Noir.
Yeah.
If you have it, go find it because this movie looks fucking amazing in black and white.
I might have to watch it in black and white. So I saw the theatrical. Did we see this one in the movies together?
I saw it with Dan.
Okay.
I saw it with Dan. This has a great story that I'll save for next time. Ladies and gentlemen, guys, gals, non-binary pals, that is what we call in the podcast business a tease.
Well, I saw this. I saw the color product, you know, the original theatrical release.
I do not believe the black and white, the noir version got a theatrical, but you know, the anniversary is coming up. And it'd be real cool if they released this in black and white on the big screen.
Yeah.
I've got a copy. I can send it to you.
Okay. I'm going to need to see that. Does Disney Plus have the noir option?
They have Logan, but they do not have the noir option.
Why? What? Oh, fuck. You've got...
I don't know.
It's all server space. It's nothing. I mean, I'm not a streaming guy, but I can't imagine that it's...
I'll give you my Movies Anywhere account, and it's on there.
Okay.
It's regular Logan, and then it's a bonus feature.
Yeah.
Logan Noir, but it's
Logan.
Todd, this movie looks so fucking cool in black and white.
Yeah, why the fuck? Yeah, details. I'm right here. Yeah, it's only. Yep, you're right. It's only the regular.
Yeah.
Fuck. Oh, it's such a great movie. Oh,
I cannot wait.
It's gonna be so much fucking fun. Yeah.
Yep. Happy birthday to everyone.
Yeah. You know, Casey, if people want to share their appreciation for the gift that you've just given them, what's the best way for them to do that?
Well, there's all of our social media on our liner notes for the episode. But of course, the easiest way to do it is go to your email server of choice, type in superpodherocast@gmail.com and write us your love letter for thanking me for giving us Logan as the next movie. And why would they do that? That is because...
Only Cap writes letters.
Tony.
So music,
a long walk.
Yeah, that was a long walk. Music for the podcast comes to us from two places. Our theme song is Take a Chance by Kevin MacLeod. You can find his music at incompetech.com. Our beer music is Feather Duster by Shane Ivers. Find his music at silvermansound.com.
So, that'll do it for the Superpod HeroCast for this week. For Todd Panic, I'm Casey Ryan.
For Casey Ryan, I'm Todd Panic.
Be heroic. We got through a mediocre movie.
Yeah, and we're about to watch a fucking masterpiece. Oh, I'm so excited.
Commander, where are we?
We seem to be stuck in an alternate dimension. And you're no longer a captain, you're a commander.
Dear God, are you a lieutenant? And why are you talking like that?
Oh, no, I don't know why I'm talking like that. But no, I seem to have no rank, only the title of doctor?
I don't think there are admirals either.
Captain, I mean, commander, I mean... Look, Casey, we are getting a message. It seems we have been tasked with reviewing a historical document entitled Galaxy Quest?
Then there's no moment to spare. Engage!
I don't think Night Shift Radio Legal has cleared usage of engage, so you might want to just dial that back there.
All right. Well, then I guess it's up to us to say join us over on the Where No Mom Has Gone Before podcast as we review 1999's Galaxy Quest.
Never give up. Never surrender.
Mom?